happening with the Senate and House bills and everything else going on. And basically, I just want everybody to fire questions at me. It's really about the way I can get more of the information from you, because I've got so much going on up in here that I have to, it's like a bingo machine. When something finally hits the stem and rolls down, that's what I talk about. So, but Ohio Section's active right now. Of course, we've got field day coming up this weekend. Hopefully you guys have got a good field day plan. I've got a game plan of the sites I want to go visit, and I'm going to try to capture as many of them as I possibly can as far as my gas tank will let me go, and be able to stop in and see things. But the main things that are going on in the Ohio Section right now are, you've heard them on the emails, Senate Bill 218 and House Bill 212, which is our PRB1 for Ohio. And PRB1, if you're not familiar with it, basically is a federal code that basically says that the FCC licensed amateur radio operator has the ability to put up a reasonable antenna on their property to be able to function their station. It sounds good in federal code, and that's basically what it boils down to, but we need to get the state to actually adopt and actually put it into their state code and their state law to be able to actually allow us to enforce that through, along with municipalities, for them to be able to take and for the hand to be able to put up anything from a dipole antenna up to a reasonable tower with a Yagi antenna on. Senate Bill 218 unanimously passed the Senate floor just a little bit before Dayton Hamvention last May. It was funny, I was up there on May the 12th with my daughter up at the State House. She had won a contest for reading for Fairfield County and was invited up to be legislator for a day by Representative Jerry Stapleton, who was the main sponsor for House Bill 212. While we were up there, and she's spending the day with Representative Stapleton, I'm sort of, edging along going, ask him about House Bill 212. Because, it's not below me to take my 10-year-old daughter and shove her in the political realm. Anything I can do to help out, I'll do. So, as we were taking the tour, we went over and visited one of the senator's offices. Now the senator of that area is Senator Tim Schaefer. Now, Tim Schaefer, I went to high school with, along with John back here. So I've known Tim for a number of years, and last year I caught his ear at a local restaurant in Lancaster and brought up the whole thing about the House bill and said, can you start something on the Senate side? So Tim started sponsoring a bill on the Senate side, which had the exact same wording. We figured we'd try to hit the House from both sides and see which one gets there first. Well, while we were there visiting the Senator's office, his aide goes, oh, by the way, Senate Bill 18's up for vote today. Had no idea. I just happened to be down there with my daughter on another function. So while she was taking the tour, I broke away from that, went over to the Senate side, listened to Senator Schaefer give an incredible talk pushing amateur radio. And if you go out to the Ohio Senate website and look up the video for May the 12th, at about, I want to say it's about 35 minutes into that video, you'll see the talk that Senator Schaefer gives, along with Senator Sawyer, and they were both praising the amateur radio operators. I mean, it's an incredible talk. It was an incredible speech that they gave. And of course, I was very proud of the speech that Tim Schaefer gave, because it's basically the one that I wrote for him when he was doing the committee work on it. So he basically read that verbatim, and I was really tickled to death about that. And so we took and watched the Senate vote go through, and it voted unanimously. So it goes over at this point, once it leaves the Senate, it goes over to the House. And it gets assigned to a House committee. And it gets assigned to the Public Service and Homeland Security Committee, which is the same committee that's been sitting on House Bill 212. And we figured, man, this is great. Both worded, no problem. You'll fly right through. About the time that it hit, that committee changed committee leaders. It was no longer Linda Boland that was heading up that committee. It went over to another representative by the name of Tracy Hurd, who represents the East Columbus and Western Licking County area. And basically, because election time's coming up, summer recess is occurring, they are not pushing that bill through the House right now. And, it's going to, and from what we've heard from talking with AIDS and my state government liaison, Nick Pittner, KNAP, has been making numerous calls and trying to get the back, kind of the backdoor information, if you want to say, you know, what's really going on. What we're hearing is, it's kind of a tradition that after the November election and before the House leaves for their Christmas break, they will basically do what's called a Christmas gift bill. And they'll basically scoop up all the leftover bills that haven't been moved, they'll put them into one bill, they'll have a session, and they'll vote on the entire package. We think that's where Senate Bill 218 is going to happen. It's going to get put into another bill and then taken over onto the House floor and passed before they go on their Christmas break. We're trying to keep close tabs on that because, unfortunately, if it gets shoveled in with something that they don't want, like a large pork project or something like that, it could end up dying on the House floor, is unfortunately where it is. And then we have to start to work all over again. And if that has to happen, I mean, it will happen. We have no control over it at this point except to just keep making the phone calls. And that's what I've been telling hams throughout Ohio. Keep calling your representatives. Keep this bill fresh in their head. Let them know what committee it's sitting in. The Ohio Section Journal, that's getting ready to come out for the summer session, has a really nice article by Nick, and he lists all the committee representatives with their office phone numbers and their office emails. So we want to use that to our advantage to start making contact with them and start getting them to be aware that that bill's sitting in there. We'd really like to have that thing passed. So that's pretty much what's going on with the Ohio Section in that regard. Yes, sir.
I guess I'm surprised that some municipalities haven't come out to oppose that, the home rule.
You know, it was amazing because they've had, the House had three hearings. They had the proponent hearing, they had the opponent hearing, and then they have basically the third hearing where they read and vote. And that's where proponent and opponent can show up. And same thing on the Senate side. None of them showed up for this. It really surprised us. We really thought that we would have opposition from the homeowner associations, from the home developers and things like that.
So from the cities.
And from the cities. And Nick even talked to a couple of the lobbying committees that represent the municipal stuff, and there was no complaints. They were aware of the bill. It wasn't like we were trying to, you know, take it underneath them. They were very well aware of it, and they read what it was, and they don't have any problems with it. It's truly amazing. It's truly amazing. The biggest hurdle we had was on the Senate side with Senator Bill Sykes, who was sitting on a committee for windmills and for cell towers for quite some time. So when he read this bill, he immediately assumed antenna equals tower. And he immediately started having some provisions, some heartburn about setback provisions in the bill, saying that, you know, well, if you have a 50-foot tower, you're going to need a 50-foot setback if your antenna's up higher, you know, whatever height your antenna is. We tried telling him, look, this isn't a tower bill. This is an antenna bill. The antenna can be anywhere from a single wire going from the peak of the house over to the tree. I said it could be something coming up off the corner of the house that's secured, it's maybe about 20 feet high. Well, he still had a lot of heartburn about that. So we had to go through and we had to tweak a few things in the bill that made him happy. But the funny part was when Nick Pittner was up during the proponent hearing on the Senate side, and he made mention, and it kind of got into a little bit of an argument. I actually watched Nick work his magic at this argument. And he says, well, when it comes to trees, we don't have any setback provisions for trees. And he says, a tree on a property line can fall over and strike the house. He goes, you're in the same situation there. And he said, you know, and the tower, the antenna structure, whatever, is if it's up high enough, it's going to be an engineered structure. It's going to be looked at by engineers and by professionals and things like that. And he comes back and he sits down. I lean over to him. I said, well, Nick, I said, just remember this. I said, God created the ark. I said, professional engineers created the Titanic. So keep that in mind when it comes down to that. But once we got past that little bit of a hurdle with Bill Sykes, the bill just went right through committee, went right through the Senate floor, and just breezed. So we were very happy with it. And, you know, like I said, right now we're just waiting for the House to wake up and try to do something with it over there on their side.
You mentioned the Homeowners Association. My understanding is it doesn't apply to Homeowners Association.
This bill does not apply to CCNRs, right, in a Homeowners Association. House Resolution 2160 that's in the federal House, it's in the Capitol right now, it will approach that. Sure. Our thoughts were this. We were going to try to go for the brass ring in one grab with this bill. Anybody here a concealed carry owner? Okay. You're aware that when that law first came out, I mean, it was pretty tight, and then started coming the amendments.
Right.
Okay. We decided to take the same approach with this. We figured if we can at least get the municipality to start giving us the right to erect an antenna, then we'll start going after the amendments to go after the CCNRs. We figured we'd be better off trying to get the one tier attacked and tackled before we start going after the next level. So, and I actually learned that logic when I stepped into this job back in July, because Nick had been working with Joe Phillips on this for quite some time and getting the wording written up for this House bill and the Senate. And when I came in on board, that's when I decided to go ahead and go after Senator Schaefer and try to get the same thing started over on the Senate side. So we use the same wording on that.
And since it's a state bill, a state law, well, the home rule wouldn't apply in this case. Cities couldn't change the wording in the state bill, could they?
No. 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 Because once this would go through, this would be a state law.
Mm-hmm.
Signed off by the governor and put into effect. So then comes the next step, is we would have to educate people on how to use this law to their advantage when they run into situations. And Nick and I have already started talking about that and said, you know, when that time comes, then we're going to start developing an information packet for the Ohio section of what this law means and how we can use it to our advantage when we come into situations involving antennas and municipalities.
Yeah, I've got a building inspector here. Unless I can catch him in bed with my wife, I'm trying. He's not going to let me bill in and go 35 feet. He don't care.
Oh, goodness. Well, that was the one thing we did in the bill, that we in the bill actually written that the reasonable height, the original antenna structure, is 75 feet, is what we consider reasonable. And we figured that number out because, you know, just basically, for being able to operate 80 meter or something efficiently, that's about the height of the antenna you're going to need to get that above the ground. So, and plus too, we had to put a height in there because if you try leaving that very generic, it starts making lawmakers very nervous because they don't want a loophole sitting in that. So we figured we'd try to go for the 75 feet, and we got it. I mean, nobody complained about that. So.
So if this bill passes, he'll be able to erect this antenna.
They have to provide reasonable, the bill basically says that they have to provide reasonable means for him to have a reasonable antenna to be able to do his function. So they really, while they could put some restrictions on the height and such, they can't deny him. They will not be able to deny him a reasonable antenna structure for him to be able to do his, to perform his duties. Or enjoy the hobby. We say perform duties, but we're also saying enjoying the hobby too. So, but you know, we really pushed this with the public service and Homeland Security push behind it, because that's what gets their attention. So, okay, that's pretty much the news that I've got right now. The Ohio Section Journal is going to be coming out here in about the next week. It'll be up on the ARRL Ohio Section website. How many people are familiar with the Ohio Section website? Okay, there's more hands going up here than I've seen at other meetings. The URL for this website is www.arrlohio.org. Anything you want to know about the Ohio Section with the ARRL is on that website. There are reports on there, and it's updated by the Section Emergency Coordinator, Jack Sovic, the State Government Liaison, Nick Pittner, our Public Information Coordinator, our Affiliated Club Coordinator, the Webmaster for it is Scott Yonley, N8SY, out in the Mansfield area. And I'm very proud to say that our website performs a lot better than the new ARRL website. So,
man, terrible.
I still get about 3 or 4 emails a day from section managers just complaining about that website, something awful. And I've got a lot of grief with it myself too. We've gotten to make a few changes, and we're actually starting to get some of the section manager tools back again that we've lost now for about the last 4 months. One of them being the certificate maker. I mean, you'd think, you know, hands love wallpaper. I mean, we like having, I've got, and my wife calls it the I Love Me wall, okay? I've got an I Love Me wall in my office. It's got all my certificates of appointments and stuff like that. And, you know, the first thing I want to tell Lig is, look, you can't take away the certificates right away. You know, you've got to let us be able to produce those, because when somebody gets appointed as EC or assistant EC or something like that, they want to have some recognition for it. I mean, it's a very, you know, it's a small price to pay for a lot of the work that's done. I'll tell you, probably one of the most appreciative things you can give to a hand is some means of recognition for what they do. And it took us 4 months to get that back. But it used to be where I could designate, okay, section emergency coordinator, you've got the right to do the AECs and the ECs and the DEC certificates, and OO, you can do your, OC, you can do your OO. They didn't give us everything. Everything's got to be run by me. So I basically told my cabinet, I said, look, send me a list of the certificates that you need, names, preferably spelled correctly, call signs, preferably listed correctly, and the appointments, and we'll start getting those done. We'll start getting those put out, because we've made a lot of appointments since that website went, since the original one went down, the new one's come up. So I'm going to be busy working on that for about the next month or so. Going back to the website, that is an absolute, you know, I'm very proud of the website that we've got now. You can pretty much find out anything you want as well in ARES or any of the other departments within the Ohio section on there. The Ohio section journal will be coming out. We're still doing that on a quarterly basis. The only thing we don't do is that we no longer hard copy that and mail it to everybody. When I took over as section manager, that was one of the first things that the league told me. They said, that's got to come to an end, because they said it's cost, because they were actually paying the bill for that. And they said, it's actually costing us too much money to do that 4 times a year, because the Ohio section is the largest section in the league. Not just the size of the state, but the number of members. Ohio has approximately 30,000 ham radio operators licensed. As far as ARL members, there are right now currently 6,300 ARL members in the Ohio section. The next closest one that comes to us, I want to say that it is
probably Texas, New York or Florida.
Well, the problem is, though, you start looking at Texas, it's a big state, there's a lot of sections within it.
Oh, that's not.
So I want to say the next one I want to say is, I think it's Michigan, and Michigan falls shy of us with about 4,000 members in it. So as far as the numbers, I had at the Ohio Section Conference last year, you know, as far as AWR members, we're the highest one. We have the highest per capita member in the entire country. So for them to send out, you know, 6,000 newsletters, and every member got one, 6,000 newsletters at approximately, you know, about 40 some cents a thing, it gets to be pretty expensive 4 times a year. So we put that strictly to an electronic format. We've got a PDF that's up on the Ohio section website. And I do ask the assistant section managers, if they know somebody that can't get to a computer, you know, can't get it downloaded, can't get it copied, I said, let me know. And I have taken, you know, after it's done, I go and run off maybe about 20 or so and stuff in envelopes and mail them out to those individuals. So, and I consider that my donation to the ARL. It's not costing me a whole lot, so, and it helps keep people informed about it. How many people went to Hamvention? Okay, good number. How many people were at the ARES forum? Okay, just about the same number. Interesting talk that Mr. Pitts gave, wasn't it? Interesting talk. That was the first time I had ever heard the AWRL say that we reserve the right to refuse any volunteer for any reason. And that kind of struck me kind of, that struck me kind of hard. How did it hit you?
I think I met some of the guys that they wanted to use service from.
It said that in writing, though, for years.
Yeah. It's been publicized, but you know, not too many ECs really, I don't think too many ECs really get that, I don't want to say nasty, nasty's not the right word, but you know, you don't get that picky because, you know, a person comes up and they want to volunteer, you know, you hate to turn them away, but, you know, there come some times when there's just, you know, some people just aren't going to fit. You know, I don't want to stereotype, but you know, there's just some times when you look at that person and you say, I cannot put you in an EOC situation, okay? And it's not as much of an image thing as it is just sometimes it might be a liability situation too, putting them in there. So it really makes it tough for the EC that has to sit there and make the tough decisions about who works, who doesn't, and if they do work, where do they work, and where can't they work, and you know, coming up from the assistant emergency coordinator position up through the emergency coordinator position, I feel for you. And going, and I know exactly what you're talking about because I was within Franklin County. And Franklin County is basically nothing but Columbus, Ohio. And we had an ARS group on the roster of about 250, 300 people. Of course, the 20% rule comes in with any group. You know, 20% of the people do 80% of the work. And the other, you know, and the other 80% of the people appreciate the work the other 20% are doing. So, but I did run into situations though where I had to go to some people at one point and say, I can't put you in here. I can't put you in this location. You know, I can't put you in a Red Cross shelter. You know, for various reasons. And sometimes we know what those reasons are. Which actually kind of allows me to segue into the Red Cross MOU. That's been signed, that's a done deal. We're back to playing well. Franklin County had a lot of heartburn with their Red Cross. And I'll be honestly truthful to say that because it was starting as I was leaving the EC position. And it all came down to, and it wasn't as much as the background check was the problem. Maybe a few people had some problems with the wording from mybackgroundcheck.com. I didn't. I used it. I read it. I said, yeah, you guys can possibly pull a credit check on me if you want to. You know, I'm not too worried about it. I'm not worried if somebody else steals my identity because, quite honestly, they could have my identity if they want to. They'll probably give it back to me after they've had it for a week. But I'll find on my doorstep bundled up and say, sorry, we found a better identity. Please take this one back. You need it worse than what we do. But the biggest problem we had was what's called an intellectual property agreement. I don't know if you guys have ever had to sign one of those.
We have an MOU with the local Red Cross, and it predates the league. It was very similar, but it does not cover intellectual property.
Yeah, and there was a lot of people down there that had a lot of heartburn over that IP agreement. And of course, you know, I think the biggest thing they had was okay, if there is a disagreement, then the person who is in question has to pay for all the legal fees if the Red Cross decides to take you to court. And that's where they have the largest problem with it. But now this new MOU came out and basically makes the ARRL and the Red Cross basically autonomous organizations that work together and not work for one another. I think that wording basically alleviated that problem, and that problem on the way down Franklin County. But, you know, truthfully, when all this was going on, I didn't see too many other ARS groups that were having problems with their Red Cross units.
We have a lot of people who still want to do the same.
Yeah. You can understand that.
I mean, really don't understand.
What people have realized, I happened to be down in Nashville when there was a flood mm-hmm. 2 months ago. And what I think a lot of people don't realize is that this is Aries in Davidson County, Middle Tennessee. Unless you have the Red Cross background check, areas didn't accept him.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And part of the reason is that they were putting people in shelters, and you don't want to risk putting somebody in a shelter.
Yeah, exactly. So. You know, the biggest problem and the biggest thing I saw, and this whole thing came about from Katrina too.
Right.
Because, you know, unfortunately, when people went over there and signed up to volunteer in the Superdome, I mean, they weren't running background checks at that time. They were taking people at face value. Oh, thank you. I'm so glad you came to help. And then find out they were putting pedophiles in there.
Right.
And pedophiles were signing up to go in and volunteer. And basically for them, it was a buffet table situation, unfortunately to say. Red Cross woke up to that, and that's when they started coming out saying, you are going to background check before we put you anywhere with our organization. And of course, it funnels down to us. Good practice. And I'll be honest and truthful with you. When I was EC, and I had a person come up and sign up with me, I used public information. I used sheriff background reports for Franklin County and the surrounding counties. I made sure they weren't on any of those lists. If they were on the list, I just basically politely declined. Fortunately, I never had to do that, but I was in a situation where I could do that. Did the same thing when I was district EC and I was making those appointments. I did the same thing when I was section EC and I was making appointments. I made sure that we were putting people in those positions that didn't have any sort of questionable background. There was one situation when I was SEC that I had to turn somebody down. And I handled that with a lot of tact. And I basically said, I'm going to decline your application. And I said, and you probably know why. And it was the end of the conversation. I'm still friends with that person. But, you know, I could not put him in a position of that capacity. So, okay, enough about that. Hit me with questions. What's on your mind?
On the that presentation of the branding,
yes,
and standardization of dress.
Standardization of dress with the official vest.
I think we should have a forehead tattoo.
The official vest. I know where the link's coming from with that. I mean, I understand where they're coming from. They're trying to, you know, they're trying to gather up the horses now that they've left the barn. Okay. Because ARRL's had this program for how many years? And they basically let every section run their own program. Every section manager let his FCC run the program. FCC let the DEC let the EC. And it was basically county by county. And the EC knows what the EMA wants of them. They know what the Red Cross wants of them. They know what the other served agencies want from them. So to me, I look at this vest thing as the generals up here are trying to tell the guys down the foxholes how to run things. And the guys, and we all know, the guys down the foxholes know what's going on, okay? They're seeing the big picture, we're seeing the details. So when that whole thing with the vest came out, I questioned it. I said, look, I said, there's already ARS units out there. They've already vested up, they've got identifications. And basically they came back and said, look, we're not asking anybody to dump what they've got right now. We're not asking anybody to do that. But we're just asking if they don't have this, we recommend this one. And these are the guidelines we'd like to see. It's not mandatory, as much as what they might try to push it.
Well, they do say it's mandatory. This is the thing.
Yeah.
If you want to use the ARES brand name,
mm-hmm.
That's something that you have to comply with, because they're looking at the, you know, ARRL and the ARES program before, it was really a county level activity.
Yeah.
And this came out of the 1950s school board.
Right.
In the event a nuclear attack was going to be down at the county level.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the Amateur Radio Emergency Communications Group,
yeah,
which then became ARES. But yeah, it was their thing. It was a county level.
Yeah.
And it ran at that, and Bracey's was a major.
Right.
Was the major player then, actually?
Yes.
Well, but you can see, I mean, it's inevitable in the post 9/11 apocalyptic world that we live in. But Homeland Security now is the driving force in emergency response. And that's why they're completely redoing their training to comply with Homeland Security. And it won't be very long before Aries background checks will be mandatory because Homeland Security will do that. And there will be national standards and they'll be approved by Homeland Security. I mean, it's.
Yeah.
Look at the wall that's writing on it. See it.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
But see, here's the thing though. The ARRL has basically got this, I always use the phrase, 3,000 pound gorilla. But they're trying to tackle back down to the ground now and say, oh, wait a second, ARS is our program. We need to standardize and everything. It's way past that point. I mean, Zeke, you're right, county level. Counties have already developed. They already know what they're doing in the trenches.
Right, when I said what Katrina proved is all of a sudden we needed a national level and not a county level capability.
Yeah.
And haphazard response.
But see, here's the thing. This whole thing with that vest, this is what really gets me. If I had never been a PIO, I'd have never seen that article. It was put out on ARL's contact page. It was put out on their public information page. Never came down through the ARS newsletter, never came down from Steve Ewald. As a matter of fact, I had to go to Steve and say, hey, what's the deal with this article over here? And he's like, oh yeah, that. You know, I got one of those responses, oh yeah, that. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I think you were the one who brought up the question during Dayton that said that the EMA here has a problem with the wording on the back. Wouldn't worry about that. Worry about your EMA. Because ARRL is not going to do any, I can tell you right now, they're not going to do any sort of enforcement on this thing. They really aren't. They put out the guidelines, they try to say it's mandatory. You know, if you don't have a vest, yes, get the yellow one. Get the safety yellow one, or the safety green, I can't remember.
It's the green-yellow thing,
okay? Get that color, because what's even more funny is if you look at Barker Specialty, who produces their stuff for them, you can still get the orange one. You can still get this style, that style, this style, a blue shirt, a black shirt, a blue cap, red cap, a safety yellow hat. They still don't have control over it. So when that came out, it was like, yeah, okay, I hear what you're coming from, but, you know, you're still going to have to let the counties worry about it, and the county ECs worry about what's going to work with their EMAs and their EOCs. The branding about it, I do like the fact that they are trying to standardize things. The MCOM testing is coming out. They've just now started rolling out the new EM016 class, which basically is for ARS leadership. The MCOM 1 class you can still take, not a problem. If you want to take that advanced one for ARS leadership, it takes a letter of approval by me. Letter of recommendation by the section manager. There are a lot of FEMA classes that you have to pre-take before this. You can also, from my understanding, you can take all the classes online, but if you want to take the final assessment test, then you have to get the letter of recommendation from me, and I believe there is a fee for that test. But I think taking all the classes and stuff, there's no charge in that. But if you want to get the accreditation and the certificate, it takes the letter of recommendation from the section manager, pay the fee, and then go take the test. And I believe that one being standardized as it is, I believe that is, and that is actually going to be a certification, not just a certificate. So where they found out the problem was with the old MCOM 1, MCOM 2, MCOM 3, a lot of people are looking at that as certifications of training. And there wasn't enough control on those tests to actually justify it as a true certification. That point. So that's the reason why 2 and 3 were pulled out and the 016 class was brought in. And that took them a while to get that developed. If you have any questions about that, I almost hate to say it, go out to the ARL.org website and go to public service and look down through the MCOM and take a look at the specifications on that. Anything else?
Have you had many people request a letter from you for that?
I've had two. Out of the entire section, I've only had two.
Right.
Yeah. I really expected there to be a lot more. I've already talked with Jack Sovic about this and said, you know, we're going to need to get a game plan together about how we want to go through a recommendation, because if I get an email from a ham out near Van Wert, So say I want to take this, I don't know him.
Right.
Okay.
Well, I have the whole background, but I'm not sure I want to go ahead and do the rest. Because again, it's sort of, how do I go about getting a letter from you? And again, I'm not sure I even want to.
Probably, what Jack and I are bouncing around is, you know, the one person that's going to know you better than anybody else is going to be your EC.
Right.
And more than likely, I'm going to ask for Jack to contact the DEC and the EC and say, hey, is this a good person? Is this a good person to take the test? Do they participate enough in your ARES group? Because I just don't want somebody that's going to collect a piece of wallpaper on this one. I don't want somebody that's going to take all the classes and then come to find out they've never come to an ARES meeting, they've never participated in anything. You know, I really want a true go-getter to get that. So Jack and I are working that out right now. And Jack's right now sitting down in sunny Myrtle Beach. Just contacted me, said he's having a great time down there. And I said, well, why?
Fishing oil out the sea.
He's out looking for tar balls. He's out there starting to do some preliminary work.
He'll be selling those on eBay.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Question.
Yes, sir.
A few years ago, actually, there was a plan to do WinLink across the state. What's the status of that? What's our current position on that? What's our current deployment on that?
On deployment.
We're still looking into it. WinLink has been another one of those 3,000-pound gorillas that's been hard to get a hold of, because when we decided that we wanted to start standardizing on it, you know, there were so many other groups that have already done their own thing, from Cincinnati up to around the Cleveland area and such as that. I had talked Joe Phillips into appointing John Tipka. When I was SEC, I was trying to get a hold of this thing, and I couldn't get a hold of it. So I decided, you know, misery loves company. And I said, you know, at the time John Tipka was DEC for ARES District 7, and I said, you know, we don't have a section traffic manager anymore. I said, I know of a need for a section traffic manager. I said, not just to check in on OSSBN and pass radiograms, but to give truly grip on the traffic system in Ohio, including WinLink. So Joe thought about it. He said, yeah, good idea. We appointed John. John tried to get his hands wrapped around it and basically kind of started hitting the same walls that I was hitting. And I figured, you know, with John, I don't know if how many of you ever met John Tipka, W-A-U-L? Strong personality.
Big?
Yeah, strong personality. Did you tell that he was a drill instructor in the military?
Yes,
he was a drill instructor in the military. And when I first talked to him, I had told him I wanted to appoint him for District DC. And a few things had happened. And finally he called me up one night in that big booming voice, like, well, do you want me or not? I mean, come on! So, okay, yeah, all right, yeah, I'm going to move. He lives about 20 minutes away from me. I was in the car and at his house within a half an hour. I mean, that's how much I jumped when he spoke. So, you know, great guy. And I figured if anybody was going to be able to get this under control, it was going to be him. And he has really tried to. He's gotten the HF system set up where he's receiving, you know, from the East Coast, getting all those messages. But we still have not been able to get the VHF, UHF situation under control.
So what are they doing in Cincinnati? I guess I don't know that.
They are going through, and they've basically set up a lot of packlink stations down to that area. And what we tried to tell them is, you know, we're going to need to bring in some internet into this thing at some time. The biggest problem I've gotten into is I've got a lot of fear amongst the users down there saying, well, the internet might go down. You know, we need to do multiple hop AX25 packet clear across state. And I said, no, you've got to worry about the last mile, granted. But I said, you've got to bring in internet to be able to be the backbone to get out of that area, get to another site, stuff on the internet, and get those across. Their thing is they want to do straight packet across the state. You know, we're trying to bring in WinLink. They're saying WinLink's nice, but what if the internet goes down? Well, granted, internet supply places will go down. Internet doesn't go down. Okay? Unless I say it, next thing you know, there's going to be a massive internet shortage. But you know, at some point when you come out of that last mile and you can get to a station and they can get a message over to another part of the country that does have internet, you're going to get that message going through, going from point A to point B. The biggest problem is trying to get these guys to let go of the 1200 baud multi-hop packet system to get clear across the state from one point to another and trying to get more of a backbone up above, more so with wind lightning. And that's really what we've been trying to get a person to head that up and basically tell everybody, look, this is what we want to do. It's been a hard fight. I'll be honest and truthful with that. And by the time we start trying to work on that, we hit that, something else comes along and grabs our attention, and we're off taking care of that, and then link. And the digital still sits there. Now you've got D-Star coming in, and you've got a lot of places that are wanting to bring D-Star into the situation. My feel is D-Star is good, but D-Star is awful expensive. My thoughts were, and I was talking to John Tipke about this, I said, what if we started working on another means instead of data at first, we start looking at a statewide voice using EchoLink. So that way the handheld operator down in Cincinnati can talk to the handheld operator up in Cleveland and be able to hit that way. We've started some preliminary talking on that, started bouncing around. I'm kind of waiting to see what happens after August to see if I'm still in this job or not before we start pursuing into that at that point. Because I don't want to really try not to start anything new at this point because I'm not exactly sure how things will shift after August. So I don't know if it gives you an answer, but it kind of tells you where we're at with things.
How long is the term for?
2 years. 2 years. Joe was just coming up on the 1 year of his first year when he passed away. As a matter of fact, it was really weird. This last weekend on the 20th was the 1 year anniversary of his passing. And I was just, you know, I sent out an email to the session captain. I said, you know, where were you when you got the news? You know? And we were all sitting there talking about it. It's hard to believe it's been a year now. And it's coming up on just coming up on 2 years that I've been appointed for this role, because it was July 7th. It was actually right before July 4th weekend I got a call from Ewald and Dave Patton at work and said, we got a deal for you. And as soon as they said that, I said, I know what you want to talk about. So I asked them if I had a weekend to think about it. They said, yeah. I went home, talked to my wife, and she said, yeah, I got no problem with it. She goes, you're not going to run for this thing when it comes up, are you? And I said, at that time, I said, probably not. I said, I don't know. I said, we'll see how it goes. We'll see how much fun it is. I found out it's a lot of fun. I like doing this. I like going out to the ham fest, going to the meetings, talking to people, trying to help people out with problems. I see a lot of good things coming up in the next 2 years if I can hold the job again. Will there be changes made in the cabinet level? I think so. I made a promise that when I first took over the cabinet, I wasn't going to make any changes. I did have a couple people resign. Bill Carpenter out of the central area and Dave Kirsten out of the southwest area. And not because I took over. God knows Bill Carpenter's been like a dad to me since my own father passed away. And he ran into some health issues and some problems with his wife and said, you know, I really got to step down. And Dave Kirsten, same situation. He had a lot of things that were taking his time. And then Ron Griffin up in northwest Ohio had the same situation. He has an elderly mother he needs to take care of. So that's the reason why he resigned and I put Bob Johnson up there at his place. And I'm still looking for assistant section manager down around Cincinnati area. I did find a couple of good people. I put out some, if I got a deal for you, emails to them and hoping they'll come back with an answer on it. I think I'm looking to make some changes in the cabinet for the next 2 years. Not necessarily personnel changes, but maybe some additional appointments that would be able to help us get some of these projects done, leave them kicked off the ground and get some progress with them. The digital's been one thing I've had on my mind. I'm also still looking for what I would call a youth assistant section manager. because I want somebody, I would like to have somebody young to come in, and I'm actually looking at maybe a 12 to 14 to 16 year old ham that would sit on the Ohio section cabinet and be able to help us be able to take and start pushing this hobby back down to the younger kids. Let me tell you something I observed over at Dayton this last year when I wasn't in the restroom all the time. I came down when I got home from the state house. I came down with the worst case of stomach flu I'd ever had in my life, and I was on my back for about 3 days. And I missed Friday at Dayton. And I'd never missed Friday at Dayton before. And on Saturday I got there, and fortunately there was a really nice restroom. By the way, next time you're at Dayton, the nice restrooms are just off of the ARL Expo area.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
They're the cleanest ones on the whole place. Okay?
And they're not that busy.
They're not that busy. Thank goodness they weren't that busy. So, but the one thing I noticed was, you know, I was working the area with the legislative sign-up. Okay? Right across the aisle was the youth area. And I don't know if you guys noticed this or not when you were there. Wasn't a whole lot of kids over in the youth area. But did you notice where a lot of the kids were? They were over at the homebrew bench with their dads and their grandpas.
Place was packed.
And that place was packed because they were putting stuff together. They had the soldering irons out. They had the solder. They were putting together what was like a simple coat oscillator, and I think another little relay circuit or something like that. These kids were going nuts over it. And they were there with their parents. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking about this. And I'm giving away the entire article I wrote for the Ohio Section Journal. But, you know, let me go ahead and talk about this. When I was a kid, and I know I'm probably one of the youngest guys in here right now. I'm 47 years old. Anybody younger than me? Okay, I'm the kid. I'm the kid, okay? Yeah, I know how old you are. You're a year older than me. But he'll remember this too. You go to Radio Shack, and Radio Shack was the best.
That's when they didn't have telephones.
Yeah, right. But they didn't have cell phones. That was the best store to go into was the Radio Shack, because you had the kits. You had the little P-Box kits. Remember those that were red on one side, clear on the other? And you had the resistors and all the parts. And you bent the leads. You put them in there. And you soldered underneath, and you burnt your fingers about 3 or 4 times in the process. You know, I think so. That's how I learned electronics. You know, kids want to do that now. When they take a ham radio class, you know, it's really neat that we teach them how to, here's the HT and here's the PTT and here's how you set the frequencies and stuff, and that's as far as we take them. We need to start mentoring them more in the engineering level of this hobby, getting them into the resistors and the capacitors and showing them what happens to electronics when they pass through components and what happens. Because in my article, I wrote this. I went to a function out in Las Vegas. It was for Autodesk, called Autodesk University. Autodesk Software writes the infamous AutoCAD software. They hold a class there every year for 4 days, nothing but classes. And I was fortunate enough to get Diamond Power, as my employer, to send me out there for 4 to 5 years straight. Every year after Thanksgiving, I went to Las Vegas for CAD classes. I had a cool job or what. So, the one talk one year was from the gentleman who invented the Segway. I can't remember his name right now, it's in my article. He gave a very startling statistic. On a yearly average, China will graduate 600,000 engineering graduates out of their colleges. India graduates 350,000 engineers out of their colleges. The United States graduates 70,000 college graduates out of engineering. That's too low a number. And you can see exactly what's happened. All of our technology that we're using is being developed overseas. We can get the kids mentoring. If we can start mentoring the kids and showing them the engineering side of things and showing them how things work, maybe that's going to trigger them to go further into their education and start taking classes. They're actually going to allow them to design and build things. More so than just writing the apps and being the appliance users. Because I'll tell you, you think back to the days of Radio Shack, that's where I got my start. That's when I learned you could not solder things together very well with acid core solder. My first kit I built, I went out to the garage and I said, Dad's got solder out here someplace, I know he does. Here's the soldering iron. Oh yeah, here's a spool of solder. they have this green stuff in the middle of it, okay? I didn't know. I was 10, 11 years old. You know, I was putting together this single tube FM radio kit. And I soldered this whole thing up. Let me tell you, that solder didn't melt very well with the regular soldering iron. I had that whole thing and it didn't work. So I packed it up, I took it down to Radio Shack, which was on Main Street in Lancaster. It's in the old downtown area. I took it in, and that's when Radio Shack actually used to have a repair technician in the back. I took it back there and said, it doesn't work. I followed the directions, everything's there. He flipped it over, and Susie looked at it, and he goes, what kind of solder did you use? He goes, did it have green, was it like acid core? I said, yeah, the only stuff my dad had. Oh. He said, tell you what, he goes, let me take a look at this thing overnight and come back tomorrow. And when I went back, I think he either got another kit off and built it for me, or he cleaned off everything, cleaned off all the old solder, cleaned it up, and actually soldered it up the right way, and he gave it back to me. And then informed, and then taught me the difference between acid core solder and tin lead solder. So that was my first lesson in electronics. I still burn my fingers when I solder things, though. So.
Okay. Frank,
yes, sir.
Just make a comment on that. I was at the ISA Power Conference, 2 weeks ago, and talking with one of the guys, you know, I came up, I was into amateur radio.
Yeah.
He was asking about it. He was saying that he and his 6-year-old son have just built a crystal radio.
Yeah.
And he said his son was totally fascinated.
Yeah.
He couldn't believe that this simple little radio, they could hear radio stations.
Yeah. On. And no batteries.
And he was, you know, astounded, so he was interested, you know.
Yeah.
Thinking, you know, maybe he had a, get his son into bed in a couple of years, it might be a little younger, he thought, but.
There's actual, if you actually show him, there's actual magic behind this stuff. And I use magic in a favorite term, that amateur radio is magic. You know, one of the things, when I went down to Joe Phillips' funeral last year, and he was Catholic, and he had a mass, and the priest was giving the sermon about, he actually brought amateur radio into the homily of the sermon. And he said, you know, amateur radio, you know, you got to have faith. You know, it's a good example of faith. You know that when you have faith, that when you transmit on that and you don't see the waves, you don't see the radiation, you don't see this stuff, you have faith that somebody else on the other side is going to hear that. And you've got faith that person who hears it is going to come back and talk to you. And this is something that is not tangible. You don't see it. You don't hear it unless you have the receiver. But you know it's there. You know. And he tied that in really good. And if we show kids the magic behind this, and we show them, you know, exactly, you know, what can happen. You put X component, you put the diode in there, you put the capacitor, you put this little tuner, and you run a real long wire. You know, I'd like to see you clip it onto the dial stop of your phone, but that's not there anymore. But that was the best antenna for crystal radios, was to wrap around that dial stop. And show them what the magic is behind that. They'll get interested. And they'll find out there's a lot more to it than picking up one of these things, dialing the number, and texting to your friend. Now let's face it, everything that this guy does, we did 20, 30, 40 years ago in our hobby. Repeater systems are basically the building blocks, what's now known as the cell towers. The texting back and forth is exactly the sample of AX8 or AX25 packet radio. I mean, everything this thing does, we did. Slow scan television, amateur television, we did all that beforehand. So if we show these kids, you know, what makes that work, we might trigger up that engineering bug in them and maybe start developing a few more technical people. I just feel like I've been on one soapbox to another.
Question, going back to Pat, Dennis' question, Pat with Winlink, et cetera. Talking to Matt Welsh of they're talking about District 10 going to D-Star.
Yeah.
When I was down in Nashville during the floods, FEMA, down there they call it the Office of Emergency Management, actually had underwritten the installation of D-Star, but during the floods, when they turned it on, about 3 hours later they turned it off because nobody has D-Star radios.
Exactly.
You know,
I know.
But what it's was very obvious to me, you know, and they were using WinLink down there quite extensively to send, in fact, we were using it from the Red Cross over to the Office of Emergency Management to send requisition lists, how many people were at a certain location, what was needed, and then they would send a helicopter with it. But it seems to me what is really needed is not one system throughout the state, but the capabilities, no matter what system you're using, that there be a mandate that you be able to connect to a common system.
Yeah.
And
yes.
No matter what you're using, so that everybody can share information.
Share that information, absolutely. Yeah. And I think we're probably breaking onto the same, probably our own version of the MARC system at that point.
At that point.
That's a good point. That's a very good point to bring up. Talking about D-Star, I mean, D-Star is great if everybody's got an ICOM radio.
Yeah, but they don't. And that's
no.
You know, they were using D-Star. It was very interesting when the flood first started and Ares was recruiting. You wouldn't hear anything.
Yeah.
Because they were using D-Star. And they very quickly went back to straight FM analog because that's what everybody could hear.
That's where everybody was at.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's been talk about, you know, D-Star, I thought D-Star was supposed to be an open source at some point. I think it was supposed to be proprietary for so many years and then go to open source. And I thought I heard some things out of date.
It's open source for Japan.
Yes.
For any of the Japanese manufacturers.
Right.
That's what it is.
Yeah, but coming over here, ICOM's the only one that's got it.
Right. Yeah.
There is no diversity of suppliers.
Right.
Equipment right now.
Exactly.
I think I saw something where they were close to having a post alpha version available that could be done without using actual D-Star hardware.
That's what I was hearing. I thought I heard something about that out of date this year. I thought I heard some conversation on that. So I'll have to wait and see. Okay. Anything else?
What are the plans up with for the fall conference?
Fall conference? Oh, good thing. I'm glad you reminded me of that. October 16th is the date of the Ohio Section Conference. We are right now on stage talking with Harold Kramer from AWRL. I think he's going to be our guest speaker. One of our guest speakers is going to show up. Matt Welsh is looking into presenting a few programs on APRS. He did that a couple years ago and was very well received. I'm also talking to him about another facet, something else I've noticed that he had been doing, and that was using Twitter as part of one of his tools to do his management of District 10. And I thought, maybe I'll come talk about it. I haven't heard anything back yet, but I asked him if he'd come talk about that and tell us what he's doing with it. Jack is working right now on getting things lined up with the MCOM portion. It's going to be basically one conference, but it's going to be two different versions, one in the morning, one in the afternoon. The morning is basically going to be all the boring section stuff, okay? It's going to be me and Jim Weaver talking, Harold Kramer from the AWRL. I'm not saying that he's boring. I'm boring. Weaver's boring. He already knows that. I've already told him that before. We're going to try not to get into the mundane things of the 20-25 minute district emergency coordinator reports. You know, we're not going to do that. I'd like to have more. We were going to have more programs in there, more demonstrations. We are planning on having a quick, probably about a half hour or so, ARES leadership meeting, which will be basically the DECs, the ECs, and the FEC, and probably myself, probably right after lunch, to go over a few things. Sort of information we can pass out to everybody. The afternoon we got Matt with his program. We're going to try once again to see how many emergency vehicles we can get down there to the facility. We're going to try to get some public media exposure on this. It's going to be pretty much a day-long conference of Ohio Section in the morning, MCOM in the afternoon. There's the committee consists of Matt Welsh, FEC Jack Sovic, STM John Tipka, It's actually being headed up by Scott Young, the NADSY. He's the committee head. And Steve Katz, who's the assistant section manager for District 7, since the meeting spot is sitting right down in the middle of his area. How many people came to the conference last year? Okay, a couple. It's going to be in the same spot. The Central Ohio Educational Service Center.
Will that be big enough though?
Yeah, we think so. Because, you know, as the Fire Academy was about a little bit wider than this, but very, very deep, you know, this new facility is probably about a little less deep, much wider though. And we've already told them we're probably going to have a very tremendous turnout. So there's absolutely no problem with them getting us more seating and squeezing more tables in there. And the nice thing is, there won't be any cheap seats because at the Fire Academy, even though they have the multiple screens, we sat way in the back, you couldn't hardly see or hear anybody up front. This being very narrow and having the three screens up front, it's going to be better for visibility, things like that. We're still having the pizza lunch, so that hasn't gone away. One of the things I'm thinking about that Jack doesn't know about yet, and he may find out about if you guys publish this, is that next year I'd like to do the same thing, but hold an ARES leadership conference sometime in the spring, and basically bring in the ECs, the DECs, the official emergency stations, and basically make that maybe about a half day thing of going over sort of a kickoff meeting for ARES at the beginning of the year before all the units start getting busy. And do that. But for this year, since I wasn't quite sure how we were going to handle the budget and stuff, we decided to go ahead and combine both the ARES conference and the Ohio Section conference into one this year, and kind of put it towards at the end of the year, so that way people, it seems like every time we tried to schedule that, somebody was having a function somewhere. Mm-hmm. And my first thought was, well, we'll do it the first weekend of October, and then I sat there and smacked myself on the head and said, dude, that's simulated emergency test weekend. If I try to hold a conference during that, I said they're going to string me up and beat me like a pinata, so I don't want to do that. So we moved to the 16th.
Heck, what about doing parallel tracks at times when you get people in that different areas could come in and just, you know, put people to concentrate so you get a little more, sometimes a little half-hour session.
A little half-hour session, you got a few people interested and the other people are falling asleep.
Right.
Exactly,
right.
We've talked about that too. There's dividers in that room we might be able to pull, and since each place has its own screen and computer and stuff, we're actually talking about doing that. And maybe for a couple of hours have some concentrated talks that people can go in and out of. But yeah, we read our minds on it. We're actually talking about that in the committee right now.
Okay, that's one thing is you have.
At other conferences you have that.
Various ones that you have. The interesting sessions get too short.
Yes.
And the questions get
very
cut
long
off because they got to get on to the next
topic.
And sometimes you'd rather have different tracks for.
Exactly. Exactly. That's a good idea. We've been talking about that. Gosh, speaking of talking, I've gone an hour now. So hard to believe. Hard to believe. I'm just warming up too. What's that?
No.
Okay, Danny, yes, sir.
I don't remember where I seen it, but that's not too long ago, that they were going to eliminate races and keep it racing.
There's been talk about that. Officially, races is not run by, how do I say this? I want to say RACES is not run by the FCC, but it's run by FEMA. And the FCC no longer issues RACES licenses anymore. As a matter of fact, I think the last one expired, I forget how many, a couple years ago.
It's fairly recently.
It's very recently the very last one expired, and they have no intentions of reissuing any more RACES licenses for groups. So there's been some talk about it. I know that Mars closed up one of their branches. Didn't they? I thought there was talk about that.
It was erroneous.
Okay, all right.
So they're alive.
Was that one of those nasty rumors running around? Or?
It was a bit misunderstood.
Okay.
Now
okay.
Now the military auxiliary, so it's actually
that's
much
right.
closer.
Okay.
And the Navy's alive and well, that's who they were talking about.
Okay, okay. I remember the name change because it went from military-affiliated radio system to military auxiliary radio
correct.
System.
That's correct. Yeah, it's still
it's still alive and well. Okay. Yeah, but as far as Racy's, we've been hearing, you know, we've all heard the rumors that Racy's was going to wrap up and they were going to basically, that Homeland Security is going to be basically saying, look, ARES is the team on the field now, but we haven't heard anything official yet.
Well, it's pretty hard to conceive that there'll come a time when they'll shut down all the radio frequencies except for these designated radios.
Exactly.
I mean, if Katrina didn't make it there, what is going to make it there?
Exactly.
Like I said, you know, again, Racy's was a nuclear attack.
Right.
You were going to have little isolated islands.
Yeah.
And they were going to shut down amateur radio,
mm-hmm.
and Racy's would have communications, but you couldn't talk outside of your county
right.
without special authorization, so you couldn't spread the word of how bad the damage was.
Right.
So I said the whole scenario that Racy's was defined on is gone
yeah.
from the planner's mind.
Right.
I said Mars is taking over part of what Racy's
mm-hmm.
had as being the official. I said I think if it came down where they were going to shut down amateur radio, the Mars would still be up as the
right.
that same level, only it would be nationally controlled rather than a county controlled.
Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. And there's been Jack and I have talked about a few times about trying to get ARES and Mars more involved with each other, because it seems like there's two groups sitting out there.
I think they're really involved with each other.
Yeah.
Very, very much so.
Have they?
Oh yeah, I mean that.
Because for my,
it depends on what county you're in.
Right, exactly.
In most cases, you know, Mars. I mean, basically, Mars is relatively a small number of people.
Right.
And I mean, if you take the Air Force, Army, and Navy, Mars, we probably have 200, maybe 200 and a half in the state of Ohio. Well, I mean, we're nothing without ARES. So I mean, people, okay, both. We're two Army Mars in here,
right.
and another Navy Mars that's not here tonight.
Okay.
But I mean, basically, we are involved in ARES, and basically, you know, we can do things that ARES can't. But ARES can do thousands of things that we can't too. There's
right.
more of us.
Yeah. And that kind of goes back into play with the whole Racy's thing too. How
yeah.
we wear the double hat.
Yeah.
Racy's could do one thing.
Yeah.
ARES could do the other.
Right.
It's the same thing with
yeah.
Mars. I guess what I'm saying is, you know, I'd like to see Mars more at the section
maybe
level.
Maybe the Mars section manager.
Exactly.
That's
one of the things. Like I said, you know, a few more after that.
Mars has an Ohio, director, whatever. Yeah,
right.
State Mars Director. Actually, I'm assistant state Mars.
Yeah.
So for Army.
Right.
But yeah, no, it's there, but it, what they're pushing to us is from the national is get involved on the local level.
Right.
And not on a state level because everything's
yeah.
done locally.
Right.
So,
and that's again something that, you know, they are all slowly recognized but doesn't know how to herd
exactly.
all the groups back into one
into one thing.
Function.
Bring them all back into the same barn.
But I said Mars has a great wind link.
Yes they do.
So I said, you know, for ARES, in some respects, they have the means to tie into where the Mars could pick up the long
yeah.
haul
yeah.
on that.
Yeah.
But that would, the NTS people would probably die of epoxy if they did that.
I don't know if they'd actually die. I don't know if the NTS people would have a lot of heartburn over that. I really don't.
Yeah, we have a serious network.
Yeah.
And basically, we also have our own radio. So, you know, basically, if there's any communication to be had, we can do it.
Yeah.
They have in the digital a lot of stuff that the amateur
right.
cannot use now, but the Mars can use. And so, you know, that's where. So.
Yeah. I mean, there's been a lot, you know, during the years, and I don't want to go back and say that anything was done bad or poorly before. But some of the things that have to be brought up to the surface now is a lot more liaisons with the other organizations. And that's, you know, Mars, Skywarn. I mean, we all know there's an MOU out there. You know, every emergency coordinator can open up his emergency coordinator book and read the MOUs in the back. But there's really not enough people between up here at the section level to make sure that, you know, that we're aware of everything that's going on, you know.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
To be current with everything.
Right.
You should be
right.
Current with.
Exactly.
And it's all people.
Yeah.
So, you know, right now there's about 12, 13 people in the Ohio Section Cabinet. I see growing that to be able to bring in more people so that there's more human networking
right.
going on at that point. Okay.
Is there any thought of our discussion about, I know about 3 years ago all the area statistics were realigned.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any thought of modifying that at all?
There's been a modification done up here already. We moved the county
that.
Up to District 10.
Yeah.
I've talked to Jack a little bit about it because when we did that realignment, it was because of Ohio Citizen Corps and realigning with Homeland Security District. And we did that, you know, watched it. Have we really benefited from it at this point? I mean, other than saying, yes, we're aligned, yes, we know that if you know, Homeland Security Section 4 activates, they know who to contact. But then again, we start looking at other resources for other things, Skywarn being one of them. Are we really doing Skywarn, you know, a lot of justice by being district this way? Up around District 6, we kind of tweaked that. We never really had that flow the way it should have following that because of the North. For the Northern Skywarn operations
right.
up there. I let that one, I know we didn't touch that. We've kind of taken a look at a few other areas, but yeah, there might be an adjustment.
The reason I'm asking is
yes.
the Red Cross has been statewide going through realignments where they've been doing consolidation of offices
mm-hmm.
and districts. And some of it is following the FEMA model. But like locally, this office here is now is in charge of not just Summit County, but Portage County and Medina County.
Yeah.
But that's three different areas districts.
I know. I know.
And you know.
And the same thing's happened down in Greater Columbus.
Columbus, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Greater Columbus now handles not just Columbus, but they handle Madison County,
and
they handle Fayette County.
And I understand from a couple of people upstairs that there's going to be more consolidation actually taking place with the Red Cross. And it seems to me, because I know if I look at it, if we have an activation in this area,
right.
all of a sudden we got three districts.
Yeah.
I mean, I got to let three DECs
know what's going on.
Not one DEC.
Three things going on. Now you bring up a good point. Remember I talked about the ARS leadership get together. That might be a good point to bring up during that. Because you know, like Jack and I sat and talked, and, you know, I've actually got him on speed dial on this thing. We talk to each other so much we think our wives are getting jealous of us. But
your wives talk to each other too? Or?
No, the wives don't talk to each other, but they're kind of worried about Jack and I talking together a lot. That's for sure. And one of the things we talked about was the districts, and I said, you know, we've had this plan now. We had the original layout for how many years before we adjusted it for Homeland Security
sure.
and for Citizen Corps. I asked Jack, I said, what do you think, should we take a look at that layout again? You know, it doesn't ever always have to be carved in stone. And it should be a growing, evolving thing with putting the needs of our served agencies in mind. But in talking about that, now we talk about Red Cross, we also have to take a look and see and make sure we're giving the National Weather Service, you know, the proper coverage that they need, the proper contacts, and as well as Homeland Security. So you just have to, there's a lot of balls there you have to juggle and
right.
bring everything into the weight of things and making sure you're still doing the right thing for everybody. It's one of those situations where you make a decision and half the people are happy and half the people have got problems. So, but you're right though. It is a scenario that has to be looked at occasionally every so many years to make sure that things are done right. Okay. Anything else? Other questions? Hour and a half.
Appreciate you coming.
Everybody's awake?
Everybody's awake.
Everybody's awake? Nobody fell asleep? All right.
And if you check our website, you'll be able to listen to it.
Well, at least it's video. I mean, at least not video.
Yeah, at least it's audio.
At least it's audio.
Yeah.
Now, if it was video, I'm getting into that recording. If it is video, if it wasn't, if it's just audio, just put this image in your mind, okay? I am 6'2", I weigh 138 pounds, and I'm blonde, and I look like a bronze Donis, okay?
All right.
So, I'm putting that image in their heads as they listen to me talk. Okay, thanks a lot for your time. Appreciate
it. Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate the invite. And I told you I'd make it up here.
Well, I was getting the best.